condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, what big session, Jack? That time out. It's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 6. They were down last night. Dow futures up 23. And if he's up 61, they were all down last night. But they are up now. So we have the... Remember the number that nobody cared about for like 2 decades? The CPI is this morning, and now it's become a real number again. So we'll see how that goes. Kevin, how are you?
Oh, doing all right. Might have to dash a little early. Shatner and I are heading to space today.
Is he going to be in the captain's chair?
What did Shatner say when he wanted to go? I know Picard was always, warp 3, set in a course, engage.
Yeah.
What did Captain Kirk always say?
Boy, it's been so long.
Step on it.
No, he just say warp factor 2, and they just go. He didn't have a
okay.
He just say ahead warp factor 2 or something like that or whatever it was.
Do you know how old William Shatner is?
I'm going to say he's 70, easy 80.
He's like 80, isn't he?
Yeah.
You guys are way 85, low.
85?
Way low. Still way low.
Really?
90 years old.
Wow.
90 years old, huh?
Yes.
Well, you know...
90 years old.
March 22nd, 1931.
Still as silly as ever.
You know, when you mentioned that, Matty, I...
When they did the Twilight Zone, the movie, they repeated that one with, I believe, with Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, he was a... He was a pretty good-looking guy when he was younger. I mean, William Shatner. I mean, he was in that movie.
Weren't we all, Tom?
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, that,
he can't have the dough to do this. I assume he's getting sponsored to do this space thing. Because, I mean, he signs autographs for, like, $50 a pop. I don't think he's got a lot of money.
He made an awful lot of money in Overstock. Was it Overstock or Wayfair? One of those things. I think it was Overstock.
Yeah, he could just be a cheap SOB.
Well, that could be.
I don't think they.
I know he had the Capital One thing for a while too.
I don't think those dudes. I'm going to ask Matty a question. He should know. You should know the answer to this, even though you shouldn't probably. The cutoff on movies on people getting money for the movies, I know, is 1957. Was when I say when you play them on TV, because Dutch negotiated that. Not saying it was bad. It was his deal when he was head of the movie union, and I'm going to say TV. Is way past that, because I don't think people on like Gilligan's Island, all those people, anybody in the 60s, I don't think gets residuals. So I don't think he gets money whenever Star Trek's replayed.
The movie, I don't know how it works. Although I will tell you, I do know that my son still gets a check every once in a while for some of the music his band from his Chicago days. He said when he gets a check, it's usually like a buck and a half, but.
Well, I mean, Scott still gets stuff for the commercials he did, and he still gets a little check every time a Chicago PD episode plays that he's in. He's probably in 100 episodes. I'll bet he's in 8 of them or something like that, so it's not very many.
Don't we have somebody who's in the entertainment world who comes in? We got to have
Jordan probably would know, but he hasn't been in a while. Maybe, Lou might.
Well, Scott, who you just mentioned, would probably know.
Oh, yeah, Scott would definitely know. We may have to have Scott back on again.
I always think of Scott as Rudy's brother in the movie, as he played, which was probably his biggest role that he's played.
Yeah.
But he's had great recurring roles on all the Chicago, you know, TV shows that are on CBS or whatever channel they're on.
Yeah, because they actually have picked the lady who's I forget her name, who plays Trudy, the sergeant. By the way, she's the most loved person on the show, Chicago PD. Some survey somebody took.
I don't think I've ever watched as much as an episode of that show.
It's pretty good.
I've never watched any of those shows either, but they're apparently all shot at the bar right by my house, and so there's always tourists outside that bar taking their picture because they watch that show.
Well, they pick up people. I mean, Trudy was a somewhat of a legend on Chicago stage, and picked her up for that's her first TV role, I think. And she's terrific. And Scott says she is the nicest person. First day he showed up, people can, they're not unfriendly, they're just busy. And she, of course, said, "Oh, Scott, you're the new guy. Here's where the coffee and donuts are." And she said she reached out to him like instantly because she realized he was new. And he says nothing but good things about her. And plus, she's a terrific
agent. Amazing how some people are just wired to do that, you know, based on how they were raised, all the things. You know, most people, if they're not being rude, they're not being, in any way, unwelcoming. But there's some people who are just immediately recognized. You know, you're the new person. You're the person not talking to anybody. You're the person who needs something. You know, let me just jump over and do that. People like that are just gold. You know?
Well, I know. Even like the world's gruffest dudes are like, "Hey, buddy, the coffee's over there." You know, even though you know it's a gruff male attempt at friendship, you also know the guy just helped you out. You can do it in many different ways, but as long as you do it, it means you care about somebody, basically, right? You know, yep. I mean, but no, I think they've done, their ratings are pretty good, and they've done pretty well for Chicago. I mean, of course, everybody loves the guy in Chicago Fire, all the ladies. I mean, what's his name? I mean, he's the heartthrob. And I think the one guy in Chicago Med. What hospital is that supposed to be, maybe?
I've never seen 1 second of that show.
They're on the near west side. I don't know if it's supposed to be county again or what, but
probably.
And the views from the fire station are always from this one over on the west side, over by the real nice firehouse over by. It's like on Ashland and Madison or something. Because all the views are, you can tell from the angle when they look at downtown where they sort of are. You know, you can't tell the exact place, but anyway, it's pretty interesting. Kevin, what do you make of? We were just talking on the way in about Big Ten is. Seems to be up for grabs this year, right? A lot of pretty good teams.
I think college football in general is. I haven't seen many teams that I think are particularly good. Let me rephrase that. I haven't seen any truly outstanding teams. I've seen some good ones. I think Iowa's pretty good. Ohio State I haven't seen yet, so I don't know if they're any good, but I think they've been challenged this year.
Who'd they lose to? They lost to somebody.
Ohio State lost
Oregon.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Oregon.
And then Oregon got upset by Stanford.
By Stanford, yeah. And, Alabama has a loss. You mentioned Ohio State has a loss. Clemson is not good this year. Notre Dame has a loss. So, like, the usual suspects are kind of out of it, which, to Kevin's point, kind of makes it a strange year. And Georgia appears to be the cream of the crop right now.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of Georgia, and I think they're quite good. Like I said, it's a very small club of teams where you look at them and say, well, that one could win the championship. I'm trying to think of who else might fit that mold.
Yeah, I think Georgia's head and shoulders above everyone else. And, Michigan's undefeated, but they haven't played anyone, so you kind of need to see them play somebody. Michigan State's undefeated, but they've played even less of a schedule than Michigan.
Yeah, but they're Michigan State, so, you know, we've got to expect, you know, something. And I actually kind of like Michigan State as a, as a school. I think some of the stuff that has gone on with the, you know, Nasser and all of that in their program might be, and some of the assault cases don't make me admire the programs very much, but the school itself, the alumni I know, and so on, I have always enjoyed that. They produce a very grounded type of person out of that school.
They, I have no idea what the stats are today. The stats. But back in our day, Kevin, despite all the ratings from Harvard and Stanford and you name it, Michigan State had the highest number of national merit finalists than any other school in the country, by far. And guess how they did that?
How did they do it, Tom?
They had a test for everybody who won became a national merit finalist. I know this because I was one. I don't know. Do they even do that anymore? I doubt it, but maybe they do. I don't know. They would bring everybody to campus, invite you to campus, and you would take a test, and the top 10 out of however many thousand showed up, got a full 4-year ride to any Michigan State or any of the colleges that were associated with them. So everybody, you know, my parents said, oh, you got to go up there. So I don't really want to go to Michigan State. But of course, to do that, you had to have already applied, fill out the full application, and been approved. Been accepted. So I had a whole drawer full of basically crap from Michigan State, and I only applied two places, there in Notre Dame. I applied there, so I go up and take the test. You got to stay in the dorm room with, you know, guys, and it was kind of neat for a senior in high school, and I don't know what they made of me, but I know they did have a lot of booze there, so I was in the greatest shape for that test the next morning. But that was
not that you partook.
Well, I looked at the odds, and I'm thinking, I got no chance at this anyway. So I didn't really care. When the beer came out, I was in, right? So anyway, it's a gorgeous place. I mean, their second and third string basketball arena is gorgeous. They must have used it like 50 years ago. I mean, it's padded seats, really nice place. They could use for any other kind of
stuff. Yeah, their football stadium kind of sucks.
Yeah, football stadium, I don't think. But I mean, I remember those guys said, contrast it to Notre Dame, they had a big bus service on campus. I mean, if you ran out of one building with a, you know, where if you had a class and make it to the next one, you had to hop the bus. And, you know, then it was real efficient. Everybody got around. It was a beautiful campus, but it's big. I mean, it's a big place. And, but yeah. So a lot of those people, you know, if I didn't want to go to Notre Dame, you already applied there. So they ended up with, you know, hundreds of national merit finals every year, which most schools don't have. I don't know what that did for them, but, they had them there. I don't know. Just
50,344 enrollment at Michigan State,
and I think most of those are on campus. You know,
I've never actually been to East Lansing. I've been to Ann Arbor, where Michigan is at, but I've never been to East Lansing. I've seen the signs for it, but I've never actually been on campus.
Well, if you've been to Lansing, you can go.
Yeah, I have. It's a nice campus. I you probably enjoy it. East Lansing, don't think very much of it. Lansing's pretty nice. And it's been a long time, so maybe some things have changed with it too. But it's okay. It's a nice school. I went up there for a football game once, and unfortunately Notre Dame got its butts kicked. Thanks, Bob Davey. The experience. Actually, it was an interesting experience because it was our first date with someone who I knew was a Notre Dame fan. And so you're rolling the dice on a first date when you say, we're getting in the car, we're driving over to Lansing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're spending the day together. If you hate each other in the first hour, that ain't going to go well. That's not going to make for a good day.
I thought you said your date was Bob.
No, not for that one.
Oh.
Yeah, Michigan State.
Not for that one.
That is a risky first date.
No, actually her name was Christy. Really, really sweet girl. I really liked her a lot.
Well, the part when you start lobbing the numbers out on the colleges, Matty, it doesn't really give you the it may be misleading as to how the place is. I mean, Michigan State is a serious everybody lives there kind of campus. Where I'm going to say if you look up Arizona State, it'll be like 80,000, and yet people are spread over the entire area working at jobs as you know, waitresses and busboys and you name it. Especially in the hospitality.
Yeah, they're just under 75,000.
Yeah, but if you look at the two campuses, you would never guess that Arizona State was bigger than Michigan State or Ohio State.
Yeah, I've heard that. Ohio State is 66,000.
And it's a whole city, the campus.
But I didn't know that Michigan State had more enrollment than Michigan. Michigan's 44,000. Still big, but
yeah.
Michigan State
it's not this
quite a bit bigger.
Maybe Kevin knows, but when the state school is... For some, I mean, it's cheaper. Michigan's like the higher crust. It's like Arizona.
Oh, it's a lot of, Michigan is all New York and New Jersey people.
It's like University of Arizona versus Arizona State. I don't know what the difference is in tuition or anything like that, but there's, one is definitely considered to be up on the other one, right? And Michigan, I mean, you would never, the same person that goes to Michigan would never be caught dead at Michigan State, at least in their mind, even though Michigan State, like I said,
had, well, their big chant in the, at the games is if you can't go to college, go to state.
Yeah.
I happen to think, you know, Michigan State is a very good school as well. And, actually that was one of my son's finalists, but he was determined that he was going to go to school in Chicago, so he went to DePaul.
Well, that's a good choice, obviously.
It was a good choice. It really, you know, worked well for him.
When he went, were there dorms? When my nephew went, they were just
dorms. Yeah, he was
dorms.
In a dorm to get started, and but it didn't take him long to move off campus. You know, part of that was, you know, he was pursuing the music dream as they went, and he even took a couple of years off when the band got pretty hot, and... and you can go look them up and go on YouTube and find Crash Poet. You'll
really?
Find some of their music, pretty heavy stuff.
Well, some of these places, like University of Phoenix, in like Central Florida, I think you drive by them and not even realize it's a huge university. I mean, University of Phoenix, I don't think has a dorm. They might, but
Paul is just under 24,000.
Yeah, and the Irish are what, 8,500, something like that.
Probably larger now.
Maybe larger now. But so, Kevin, we've been talking for
Notre Dame is 86.
That includes grad students, which they probably don't have more in DePaul anymore. DePaul's grad school's downtown, pretty much, right? I think at least the business school's downtown. Kevin, the interesting last night. I was kind of wishing you were listening with me. The Fed, who I've been nothing but giving crap to. The one guy I think has, if you actually let him talk, has a brain cell working, is Bullard, or at least he will say something. And one of the guys was giving him the party line on CNBC is this supply chain stuff, which I want to get into with you quite a bit. Because here, White House plan aims to help key West Coast ports stay open 24/7 to ease supply chain bottlenecks. Now, I'm going to say that if the supply is into you, being trucking and railroad, is not 24/7. You can do 24/7 all you want. It's not going to help you, but that's just me. But that would be a question to you. But Bullard came out and they said, well, what do you think about supply chain bottlenecks is causing this inflation? And Bullard, well, first he said it was about a 50-50 chance that this inflation is already, didn't use the word runaway.
First of all, causing would be the wrong word.
Yeah, right.
Contributing? Yeah, sure, go with that.
Well, what he said was, and I said it in a really interesting way, he goes, if there's a supply chain bottleneck, okay, one price goes up. That's it. Because when you start getting general, there's a supply chain everywhere. The only way you can have general inflation is they have too much money in the system. And he goes, well, we have that. Or he called it liquidity. He didn't say money. Is they have excess liquidity, and we've got excess liquidity. So that's why all the prices are going up. He basically gave a very monetarist argument, which I haven't heard from one of these guys in 25 years. He goes, there's too much money in the system. That's why they're all going up. Supply chain will make an excuse for that in one spot. It's not a general inflation as we see now is not caused by supply chain bottlenecks. And of course, the announcer who's been used to the other line just kept chipping at him. No, seriously, isn't this all caused by supply chain? No, it's caused by excess liquidity in the system. Otherwise, you have one or two, if there's a problem with oil, yes, oil will go up. That's it. You know, maybe something, or somebody uses a lot of oil to deliver something. That's it. It doesn't cause a general inflation. The only thing that can do that is too much money. Now, I don't think I think they couldn't wait to get him off, Kevin. Yet it's the,
He's not spouting the party line.
No. All right, so what?
Well, you know what? I have some thoughts about that, and, you know, it's partly based on some of the, some media experience just with sports, but this whole party line thing, you know, I do think a lot of it in media, because you know, there's a lot of belief that it's all about if it bleeds, it leads, and to an extent that's well, let me put it this way, not to an extent, that's a factor, but I don't think that's really it. I think when we talk about media bias, and it's you know, and I'm not talking about necessarily left or right or anything with that. I really do think that it is all about access. That if you don't have access to the people who have inside information, who can leak you stories early, all of that kind of stuff, if you don't have access to that, you're not going to be very successful. And they all the journalists are just like everybody else in many ways. They work hard to get into the club, to get into that small group of people who are on national media. And if you don't have access, you don't get to stay in the club. You work hard to get there, you cultivate your sources, and you're out of the club if you can't be breaking news. And the politicians all know this. The politicians, the people in the bureaucracy as well, they all understand this. So, you know, that's how they get their messages out. It goes out through media. This is why I think a big part of why people don't ask the clarifying questions, don't ask difficult questions, don't do any of that, is because, you know, they don't want to lose their sources. It's just like watching, the local media here and how they deal with Notre Dame football and how they deal with the coaching staff. If you don't, you know, if you rock the boat too much and you can't get interviews anymore, you can't get the sit-down interview, you can't get the one-on-one interview, you know, you can't get any of that, then, you know, welcome to the high school football beat. You know?
Yeah.
And if your self-worth is tied up in the fact that, hey, I am I'm a national reporter, I'm a national politics reporter, and or your self-worth is tied up in, hey, I get to cover something that's, you know, a big-time college football, and the alternative is, in the football sense, is you're in the high school beat, in the reporting sense, you're back to covering school boards. It's a major hit, and I think that's what drives a lot of these, and that's why you don't get those questions, Tom, that you're talking about. That's why they want to rush them off of there, because they're rocking the boat, man. And if that becomes what your show is about, then you're going to get cut off because you're not spouting the party line.
Well, I have a serious question for our executive producer, Mr. Weber, because he's the one. For people who don't kind of know this, one of the reasons why why sometimes the show might seem a bit scattered. All right. Part of it is just me.
Is people like you and me.
Oh, yeah. But part of it is just that's just me. I just immediately jump to the next topic because I think they're connected. So I don't know. I guess you either like that style or you don't. I'm just stuck with it. But there actually is a functional reason why that is that because, and this is when you know that, when you hear me talk about like federal people, you know, front running and things like that, it bothers the living bejesus out of me, because a small firm like PTI or even a bigger firm in this business, the regulatory organization as it leans on top of us is something that you almost have to see to believe. For instance, if I was a regular person and had like notes and scripted the show, I would have to have those approved by my brother before I could do the show. Because it's potential communication to customers, even though I'm just doing a radio show. And it's a First Amendment right, or whatever, whatever the hell it is, Second Amendment. And I mean, the idea.
Sure,
yeah. Well, whatever it is, I don't know what the hell it is, but it's a right of somewhere in there in the Bill of Rights. And the thought that I can't do this outside of my quote other job because FINRA has decided this is their purview. I mean, they gave us no end of grief because Audrey does real estate, and she's still registered with PTI. I mean, are we supervising her real estate? What are you talking about? Why would we? That's why if you're going to work for Schwab now, you cannot have another job. If you find out that you're waitressing on a Saturday night, they're going to fire you. Because they're supposed to know, you're supposed to let them know, and they're supposed to... this is insane what the government thinks they can do to people. So one of the reasons why we're kind of so scattered is because I can't have any notes, okay, and don't want to. So if a FINRA guy comes in here and says, tell me about your scroll, the first thing I say is it's unscripted. Oh, and he's pissed off then that I know the rules, and I know because I was the CBOE when we wrote these rules. I know what I'm supposed to say. No, it's totally unscripted. I talk about the news, whatever comes on. Somebody calls in, I answer a question. I never give advice. Oh, And they're like totally disappointed because I said all the right things. Well, Maddie Weber has said that that's also a strength, because if somebody comes in and we interview them, I just, wherever they say something, I just go where that leads. Now, the flip side of that, and this is a long question for Mr. Weber, is if somebody's going to interview Mr. Bullard, and the Governor Bullard, wherever he is, and I'm the person on CNBC, generally I think that I have a list of questions for him. Am I right, Maddie?
Yeah, I think the best interviewers do a lot of research. They understand the background of someone. They understand a couple of funny anecdotes about them, maybe. They understand, you know, what they want to get to if it's a serious interview. But they use it as a guideline. They don't, you know, stare at their questions and then wait for the person to stop talking to ask the next question. They just have bullets down to get back on topic if they get off topic, or, you know, if there's a lull to get back on track. But they really let the interviewee sort of guide the conversation based on actually listening to their answers and then engaging with them and asking follow-ups. And then all of a sudden it becomes a conversation, and that person actually relaxes, and you get more out of them than you would have in the first place. And you don't even have to look down at your notes very often, if at all.
Well, I got the sense yesterday, whoever the two people were interviewing him, is that as soon as they said, well, you know, the inflation is transitory, like, right? Which was going to lead them to question number two. So when he said, well, I give it about a 50% chance of being transitory, 50% chance of it going on for like a whole bunch of years. And I could just sense that it totally screwed up their question number two.
Oh, I bet it did.
And they didn't, well, like me, I'd be fine with that. I'd just roll with it because I don't have a question number two. But, so I guess.
That is how a good interviewer would handle that.
They were not in there.
You don't want to lead the witness, as you always say, and you want to, based on their answer, take the conversation that way.
Well, they were definitely flummoxed as soon as he veered off the party line. It knocked them right off whatever their little script was. I mean, they were not happy. S&P Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 64. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Well, Rope Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Brett Weber on the board. SP Futures up 8. NASDAQ Futures up 63. And we've got Dow Futures up 43. We were down last night. Yesterday was another day where we absolutely pulled the rug out of the market going into the close. That's like like 2 days in a row we've done that, and that is, that's not a good sign. It doesn't mean we can't turn around like we have a million times, but it's just it's not a good sign. I mean, I always have felt that what happens near the close when nothing happens either shows mutual fund buying or selling and what the underpinnings of the market is. And when you start selling off into the close, like I said, it's not necessarily a bullish sign, but like an analyst, it can turn around. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 111.7%, the FTSE down 5, call that flat, CAC round up 13.2, so kind of a mixed bag over there, but the DAX is strong. Asia, Nikkei down 90 points, Shanghai up 14.4%, the Hang Seng unchanged. When was the last time we said, how can that thing be unchanged at 25,000, but it is. The bonds, 1.57, so they touched over 1.6, I believe on Monday, and now they're back down to 1.57, still hanging up there pretty good. One minus 1 basis point to minus 11. Japan still a positive 0.09, so they're unchanged. Oil, down 43 cents to $80.21, still a rarity, but not, they got to like 81 and a half or something. Brent down 49 cents, 82.93. Natural gas down 7 cents, 5.41. So these guys are a solid 80 cents off the high, which I think was pushing 6.20. RBOB down a penny to 2.37. Gold up 12.50 to 17.71. Gold starting a little bit of a run here. Silver up 33 cents, 22.85. Still not in danger going over 1,800, or surely 1,900. Copper up 6 cents, 4.39. We've got the crypto. We've got Bitcoin down 556 to 55,046. Matty, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Looks like we're off to a pretty good start on the Edens and Kennedy. Traffic building steadily on the Eisenhower. Good. Weather today, some clouds early, and then we'll clear off this afternoon. We'll reach a very pleasant, partly cloudy high of 71 today. Right now it is mostly cloudy and 60 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 75. Right now it's clear and 51. In sports, the ALCS is now set, and the White Sox are unfortunately not a part of it. They were blown out at home by the Astros yesterday, 10-1, as Houston wins the best of five series 3-1, and will take on the Red Sox in the ALCS. The Braves punched their ticket to the NLCS. They beat the Brewers 5-4 and won that series 3-1. They'll face the winner of the Giants and Dodgers, who of course have the two best records in all of baseball and unfortunately have to play each other in the division series. That series of course is going to go to 5 as the Dodgers beat up on the Giants last night 7-2 and tied that series 2 apiece. So they're off today and they'll play a deciding game 5 tomorrow in San Francisco to see who advances to take on the Braves in the championship series. NHL hockey tipped off last night with a couple of games to open the season. The Blackhawks begin their 21-22 campaign tonight in Colorado. They'll take on the Avalanche at 9 p.m. Central Time to open their season. Coyotes open the season tomorrow at Columbus. Chief.
Are the Hawks supposedly back or better than last year?
From what I've read, they have a really good shot of making the playoffs this year. They are considered greatly improved. Now, I couldn't get in any details if you asked me a follow-up as to who they added.
Well, they added that really good goalie, the kind of at the end of his career, but he's still good.
So I'm kind of looking forward to it. And last night I got a tip, I'll say.
Oh God!
To take the Seattle Kraken, the expansion team, a hockey team that opened their season last night in Vegas. So that was kind of weird to see.
They lost.
There's not two original six teams there. Las Vegas versus Seattle, but +1.5 the puck line. That Seattle was tough, a good defensive team, and they would play Vegas close, and they were getting great odds and getting a goal and a half if you took the puck line. So I said, what the hell? And 2 minutes into the game, they were down 2-0. I was like, oh my God. And then they were down 3-0 halfway through the second period. And then they stormed back, tied it, and then gave up a late goal to lose 4-3 and got the winner. So, now I'm a Seattle Kraken fan, whatever the hell a Kraken.
Kraken.
Is it Kraken? I think it's Kraken.
No,
it's release the Kraken. It's some big monster in a, I forget what.
Norse mythology.
Yeah.
Norse mythology.
He's the monster under the waves or the sea. He's like the North mythology's Poseidon, right? God of the sea or something? I don't know. I mean, I used to know, but not anymore.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, they. I don't know anything about a Kraken, but I can tell you they had a pretty cool uniforms and a pretty cool logo with their the S and the anchor. And they had, you know, they had some good players, obviously, via the expansion draft. And I don't think they're going to be, you know, very good this year necessarily. But they came back and played Vegas tough and happy to win the bet.
I'm one of these. I'm not a big language. You can tell by me talking. I'm not a big language freak, but I'm kind of weirded out by since these are team sports. Any name that doesn't end in S. Unless the word itself is plural, like Irish or something.
But like that, White Sox?
well, that's a description, I guess. But I'm saying, like, the Cardinal. Well, if you're going to be the Cardinals. There's more than one guy there.
But and they're the color.
They're named after the color, not the school color, not the bird.
Ah, okay. But still, I mean, the Kraken is one guy. You wouldn't name the team Zeus, would you?
Yeah, you don't like collective nouns for
right.
Well, you don't like singulars.
That's the singular is
like
a problem.
You're good with a collective noun. Yeah. You're not good with a singular.
I mean, you wouldn't name a team Zeus, would you?
apparently, there's probably people out there who would.
Yeah, the
we're the Zeus.
What about the Oklahoma City Thunder? Do you like that one?
Mm. It's better than Zeus.
New Orleans Jazz, or excuse me, Utah Jazz. They were originally New Orleans.
Well, they should have changed that name when they went to Utah.
Yeah, I don't think Utah is known for their jazz.
No,
they're not. Oh, I'm telling you, Salt Lake City, rockin' jazz town.
I'll tell you what, there's one place you don't want to be looking around for something to eat at 11 o'clock.
Maybe not even 9 o'clock. Kidding.
Now, you mentioned that we talked about football road trips earlier. Bob Golden and I did go on went out to Brigham Young, and. You know, of course, everything in Provo is closed up, so you do a Saturday night game, and there's only a handful of places, a handful of chain restaurants where you can grab a bite after the game. Well, we wanted to get a pizza, but the traffic flow was so very much against the notion of driving it to it. So we tried to order, and the pizza places told us, yeah, we can't deliver there because the traffic won't get us, and there's, you know, it's only places like Pizza Hut, so you can't go to hit a local restaurant
so
at
you
that hour because they're closed.
You weren't worried about getting the bad pizza like Michael Jordan did?
Something like that. It wasn't that late a game because it was broadcast back to the Eastern time zone.
Well, Michael Jordan got the bad pizza there, remember?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sure he did, yeah.
Well, they knew it was him. Anyway, two things. One thing, Kevin, before we... wandering the supply side stuff and a little bit of the CPI number. Everybody can tell this really bugs the living bejesus out of me, but this idea of, this morning the news was Boeing's gonna require everybody to get vaccinated, they're gonna fire everybody, right? They've been anxious to fire these union people forever, so I'm saying this is just another reason. But the idea of forcing the employer to do the bidding of the regulator is not new. If you're in a regulated industry like ours, it is clearly somebody's idea about controlling the population, without a doubt. I mean, I can at Pullman, the idea of telling some guy who was a welder that he couldn't help at his buddy's bar on a Saturday night, the guy would have dotted your eye. What do you mean? It's none of your freaking business what I'm doing on Saturday. Now all of a sudden it is, and I got to believe that the banking industry is getting the same kind of crap that our business is, and this is just another way. The things that the Bill of Rights won't let the government do, they seem to have found an out somewhere that if they can get enough big companies, they can tell the big companies how to treat their employees and what to do. And you know what, Kevin? I think anybody who's in our industry is not at all shocked with this vaccine thing. Not at all. No, it's your job to make sure people are being vaccinated. I mean, it's a way in industries are not so far into. You know, I mean, I'm just saying you gotta keep your eyes open as to what's happening. And you know, I'm not. You know, I don't even know this. Now it's weird because who's ever in office, it seems like they have their own way of trying to corral people and make people less free. The Republicans have one way of doing it, and the Democrats are got seemingly another way of doing it. but everybody's kind of going the same way, or is it just me?
Well, we've gone totally heavy-handed on it, though. That's the thing. It used to be at least a little subtle. This isn't. As Carlos pointed out numerous times, I don't know if he said it on the show or not, but there's going to be some problems. So you take Boeing. How much of Boeing's work is government contracts that require clearance?
A real lot.
Yeah, well, what's going to happen if all of those people with, or not all of them, but even 10% of the people with clearance say, forget it. You know, I'm close enough to retirement where I can take a retirement benefit, or they just say, forget it, I'll go find a job someplace else, instead, and they walk away. You know how long it takes to get clearance?
Well, it's got to be like a year or two, easy.
Yeah, it takes a long time. So they're going to be totally screwed, because, you know, they're going to have, they need people who can meet these contracts, and those contracts are part of the lifeblood of the company. So you're going to have those problems. But the other part of it is that people who didn't want to take the vaccination, and they're forced to, because you're saying, well, my family's got to eat, so you're forced to doing it. Well, what happens with those employees? Well, they hate you.
Yeah. Well,
they may comply, but they hate you, and it's the last time you're ever going to get anything extra out of them.
Well, that's right.
You stick around for an hour, would you, today? Nope. Sorry.
Yep.
Gotta go.
I don't. How many people
go above and beyond on anything? Just isn't going to happen. And so this is so self-defeating, and it's ridiculous, because the infections just, you know, month by month, it is tilting away from vaccinations. We have more COVID deaths in 2021 than we had in the same period in 2020, despite the fact that, you know, so many people are vaccinated. We have the excess mortality in statistics are higher this year than last. That should not be happening with if we have vaccinated people, and yet it is.
Well, it's all in the booster now.
You know, it's self-defeating and ineffective.
Well, if Pfizer has its way, they're going to be giving you a booster every 2 months at some point, or which anybody has to realize that thing's not working if you got to do that.
Well,
it's working
somewhere. If Pfizer has its way, it's going to do that. How many people have Moderna or Johnson & Johnson vaccinations? Because to my knowledge, they don't have boosters yet.
I think the Moderna one, first of all, it appears that the Moderna, well, I don't know, I mean, depending on what you read, but it appears the Moderna one is doing better than the Pfizer in terms of longevity. I don't know how much more.
The question is better good enough?
Well, let's see. Hey, let's get on. We could talk about that forever, and we have. What is, if the entire place is supply, what would you characterize, Kevin? I mean, you've got people reporting to you in class, and these people run these businesses. I was asking about, you know, if you could sit down in one of these places that supposedly has this big labor shortage, if you looked at this port, this huge picture, this port I'm watching here on CNBC, I mean, if you were there and say, okay, you had 2,000 people in March of 2020, and now you got 1,900. Okay, whatever the number is, let's assume there's less, because that's what everybody keeps saying.
Yeah, they're running about 70%.
All right, so you've got, so what does that mean? You've got 1,400, right?
It means you have a backlog, you need to catch up, and you don't have the resources.
No, but I'm saying, in terms of employees you have, it'd only be a certain amount of employees you can put into place. But I mean, okay, so say the number is 2,000, and now you're down to, well, that brings up a subject that I didn't even think about, that you still have the same 2,000, but now your backlog's more, and you can't clear the backlog. Well, that's kind of a question number two. But what they're leading you to believe is they used to have 2,000, and now they got 1,500. And if that's the case, I think before you solve it, you got to figure out, where do they all go? Well, if 300 of them have croaked, well, that's a problem, isn't it? I mean, they're not coming back. If 200 of them, you want to work all this overtime, and they said screw you, and they're retired, I don't know. Can you entice them? Is there a way to bring somebody back for a month or two? I don't know. But I mean, depending on, but what you find out when you look at this list, every one of the things you find is a potential another little solution. But if you don't know what you're dealing with, how do you know how to solve it? I mean,
I will tell you how it will get solved. I sent you an article yesterday, actually video, I think, that, and I forget what business she was in. The CEO said, you know what? We're flying everything from now on. First of all, the cost of shipping via freight cargo has gotten higher for all of the reasons we're discussing. So it used to be that to ship anything by air was so much more expensive than shipping, you know, than faster and important for some products that are time sensitive, but generally, prohibitively expensive compared to the more traditional shipping methods. Well, that's changing. That relative difference has shrunk. You know, it's what did we go from like $2,000 to $20,000 per container just for the cost of shipping it. So you're going to start seeing things sort themselves out along the economic lines. And so, I've been preaching a lot of infinite game type of thinking anyway, where you have to stay in business. In this particular CEO's case, she was saying, look, it's cutting our profit margins. We understand that. But you know what? We need product. We need to be in business. And so if this is what keeps us in business, is flying this stuff in, then that's what we're going to do.
Kevin, I keep harping on this, or I shouldn't, but have you seen any stats that said the Port of Long Beach in March of 2020 unloaded 5,000 containers a day, and now we're only doing 4, or we're doing 4,800, or we're doing 5,200? I have not. I mean, there's got to be out there somewhere. I just don't know where to find them, or maybe I aren't looking in the right spot. I mean,
I haven't looked, but I'll bet you I can find that.
I mean, do we actually think the rail car loadings are down from back then? I don't think they can be. I mean, they can't be down very much.
I mean, well, this is also exposing some of the clunkiness of our distribution system, because when you have to do intermodal shipping like that, you can't unload from the port, from the yard in the port directly onto rail. You have to truck it, and then when you want to get all the way across the country, we don't have freight lines that run all the way across the country. So you have to, you may, for instance, in Chicago, have to take it by rail to one freight yard, and then truck it across town to another freight yard and put it on another train and send it on its way. So that clunkiness is okay. You know, we sort of had a distribution system in equilibrium at that point. But now when you're dealing with a lot of competition for truck driver time and, everything else, because we don't have enough truck drivers, then you have a totally different problem.
Well, when you have, I mean, I know a little bit about the rail area, because everybody's listening to me ad nauseum about rail stuff. Every single time you can, if you take a rail line and you make it into a bike trail or can't wait to sell it, and all of a sudden you have, 10% as many rail lines as you used to have, why do you not think at some point you're not going to have a problem? Well, the thing that you do, I mean, I assume everybody knows what a unit train is. And a unit train was famous for coal, and then it became oil. And my first question would be, why the hell aren't there a rail line that goes into the Long Beach port? I'll bet there is. I mean, I can't believe there's not one rail access there. But if there isn't, why the hell not? I mean, duh. And if you're piling into Long Beach, why exactly? It's not the question of whether or not that the train has to be broken apart here in Chicago. The question is, yes, if you pull into the Union Pacific yard and your particular container needs to go on the Norfolk and Southern to the Chesapeake, you might have to ship the container. Now, the car itself goes into the Belt Railroad Yard, Indiana Harbor Belt Yard on 67th Street, which is the biggest yard around, and that's where the trains are made up. They take one car from one train coming from the west, and they make up the train going east. They do not have the capability there of taking individual container off one car And that's what you're talking about, Kevin. If one of the containers, if the car is supposed to go to Ohio, but one of the containers is supposed to go to New Orleans, then yeah, you've got to truck that container from that yard to essentially the IC yard, which is now the Canadian National Yard. Yeah, that's a problem. But, you know, could you, if you use your head, make a unit train of containers if you sorted them properly? I mean, could the sorting, instead of coming off the boat, be sorted that way? Could it be sorted into a unit train if you had a rail yard sort of in the place?
Yeah, absolutely.
The answer is yes.
And the reason it could is, you know, for the same reason that, you know, we sort things all the time. That's just easy database technology to make sure to organize it properly.
Because
nobody even has to sit down and sketch out anything. You just say, you know, here, database, optimize this for me.
Well, so the idea it started with the coal unit train. That okay, the coal plant in Cincinnati or wherever the hell it is, you're going to get an entire train of coal cars, which obviously a coal plant can handle. So that train comes through Chicago as a unit. And it theoretically never stops rolling. Of course, there was a few spots in Chicago where it would have to. But that train never stops rolling. And all the way from Wyoming to Cincinnati. That's the theory of it. But you can't do that if you've got, you know, 500 containers on a train going to 500 different destinations. There's no such thing as a unit train. I mean, as a unit container shipment, you know what I'm saying? So somehow along the line,
And for all I know, and I don't know enough about it, for all I know, they are doing that.
They can't, because not they might be. They might be trying to have, you know, at least the two containers on the one flat car going to the same place. I hope at least they're smart enough to do that. But what I'm saying, the rail system is set up for essentially boxcar loads, for a car to go someplace. Not for breaking the boxcar in half, which is essentially what you're doing when you take one trailer off a flat car. And is that designed for taking the boxcar in half and shipping half the boxcar load one way and the other half the other? That's not what they were never designed for that. So the idea is you need to sort them getting it when you put the thing together, not when it comes to Chicago. It's more than anybody needs to know. But I'm saying, what do you think? How much of it really is labor, Kevin? I mean, we talked to Carl Heavy Friday and the 4 million people that are left. And let's say they all retired. I mean, hey, the problems here in Chicago with the shootings and everything.
They are dealing with things like, you know, and it's a lot. So much of this starts in California that's a problem, because California has been heavy on all kinds of workplace mandates, including vaccine mandates. So, you know, that part of the labor issue is now a matter of stubbornness. Because, you know, as we're seeing with Southwest, is Southwest going to double down on their vaccination mandate because they don't want to lose this battle to this sick out, to this job action, or what are they going to do? And unfortunately, we are seeing, especially among, you know, many of the politicians, is that there is an intransience here, where they're just not, you know, they're not willing to back down no matter how unpopular their mandates are. And you are starting to see a lot of pushback on this. You're starting to see some in the United States, but I don't know if you've seen any of the stuff that's been going on in Europe, even now in Australia, where they are having massive demonstrations against this. And it's not getting covered very much here because, again, it's off of the script. As we discussed earlier, but people are starting to push back and say, you know, government, you need to start minding your own business, not ours.
Kevin, my uncle used to have, you know, he knew these guys from when he was on the Vice thing in Cicero. He used to have breakfast every day, and these guys were all dead, so I can use their name, with Al Taco and all the guys who ran the mob in Chicago Heights. And I go, hey, Unc, what are you doing hanging with those guys? Like, you know, and he says, Tom, my grandfather told me one thing. They're in kind of a different business. They may not be the best business. You don't want to be in there with them. But as long as you don't take any money from them, everybody's fine. Because my grandfather knew the Black Hand when he was in. He goes, so, you know, if you want to go to a ball game with them or something, knock yourself out. Just don't let them buy you a beer, or you buy them one right back. You don't ever want to get behind. Now, you talk about, I listened to the guy from Southwest there yesterday, the head of it, And he was fairly bristling with what the government's making him do. And he was not happy. And he was saying, we don't agree with that whatsoever. But the dude, I'm going to say in the last year and a half, has not missed a paycheck because of the government. I'll bet he's had every, and I bet he's gotten a bonuses, even though the airline.
Well, yeah, because they're a contractor too. You know, that's the problem is this mandate for everybody with over 100 employees doesn't exist. It was an announcement that the president made at a news conference, but OSHA's issued nothing on this yet.
Right, but my point is, there's only so much you can.
There are some mandates for people who have government contracts. And so, yeah, Southwest, as one of the airlines that is a government contractor, is not missing any paychecks because of government
largesse. Okay, what I'm saying, yeah, it's not whether they have a contract or not. I'm doing this Southside morals. When somebody gives you that kind of money, they own you. And if you don't realize when you take it, something's wrong with you. Just saying.
Yeah, when they tell you to pump and dump, I probably shouldn't use that analogy on this show.
Yeah.
But when they tell you it's time for your business to have a fire, when they tell you whatever they tell you once you're owned, government's like being owned by the mob.
That was my point. Thank you for actually saying it. Kevin, we'll talk on Friday. But S&P futures up 10, NASDAQ futures up 69. Be back, Mr. Russell Rhodes. We're half far away from the CPI number. Be right back.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here. Well, I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 875. We're jumping around. The markets have been, yesterday, without any real direction. I'm going to say the NASDAQ went up and down 80 points in a very short period of time, probably 7 times before it got the rug pulled out around the close. I don't think that's healthy. I hope I'm wrong. Do we have to call him professor, or can we call him doctor yet, Matty? What's the story?
You have to ask him.
Well, you're supposed to. You're the executive producer.
You can't call me doctor yet.
When are you going to get this? When are you going to get the doctor thing put on there?
Now you're going to sound like his wife and pressure him.
Just, I know. In front of a nation, a global audience, you're going to shame me on it.
No, I just you keep saying you're like a half a sentence away, and you know.
Is he international? Are you international again today?
Am I where?
International again today?
No, I'm not. No, okay. I'm Indianapolis today.
Well, that's far.
Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, it's cosmopolitan. Yeah.
Not quite London.
Indiana below I-90 has always been kind of suspect, if you know what I mean.
Everything above I-90 in Indiana is just pristine.
I didn't say that. It's just a little, you know. It's like Illinois.
I fly over that when I go back and forth, and it's like, oh my God, some of it looks like there might be a zombie apocalypse going on there.
Well, it's like in Illinois, once you get past I-80, it's a little difference in attitude, a little difference in dentistry, shall we say. It'd be nice, you know.
How we still have some Republicans in the state.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we have quite a few. I think when the Republicans are in office, we gain Democrats, and when the Democrats are in office, we gain Republicans. I don't think anybody's happy with anything that's going on, but that's just me.
I doubt there are many Republicans making the conscious choice to move to Chicago these days.
No. Well, yeah. I think the idea that, I kind of wanted to sort of talk to you about that in terms of these, supply choke points. And we went through a thing here, especially in Chicago, where, pick a part of the world. I mean, was it Germany that dumped all their nukes, shut them all off? And now they have problems with natural gas. Well, I thought they did. Was Maddie? We talked about this. Didn't they decide to not have or to not maintain them, and whenever they were supposed to come off, they came off. But somebody, or maybe it was France, somebody dumped their nukes.
Well, France did not dump their nukes.
No, they're still going strong.
I personally think it's one of the reasons they maintain status as a modern country, because they have such cheap energy.
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, they have more nukes than anybody, I think, in France, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really, it's what they run the country on.
One of them decided to dump them. I think it might have been Germany.
It's funny that people kind of fumble around and don't realize that. I think they don't realize that France is like that because they've never had a big blow-up, you know?
Yeah.
It's worked, and when it worked, nobody pays attention.
Well, I mean, here, the engineers have gotten so much better. I know when Commonwealth Edison, which they shouldn't have been able to do, but they bought, was it Allegheny Power? I think a while ago. Evidently, Allegheny Power had some of the best nuclear people around. And they by moving into Commonwealth Edison, now, they've been, who knows, those guys are probably dead or retired, but they helped Commonwealth Edison keep these nuclear plants going many, many years, maybe many decades after they thought they were going to have to close them down, and they're just as good as the day they put them up. So, and they're still, you know, firing away. But I guess what I wanted to get to you is that now we're talking about this worldwide coal crunch, because there's still, yesterday I was talking about 135 coal reactors, coal plants in India. I don't know how many they got in China, probably way more than that. And now all of a sudden, I mean, the three plants in Chicago here, We couldn't wait to close. Now there was, and they look ugly, and you know they were belching some smoke, but there was a number, for $200 million or $150 million, you could have brought those up to modern pollution standards. Now does that mean you still want one in your backyard? Well, maybe not, but now we got rid of the three of them, and so instead of bringing them up to modern specs, we are taking them apart and they're gone. Well, the yards are still there. So now we seem to be having some problem with natural gas pricing, and all of a sudden now do we have enough natural gas plants? And then we have the utility now able to essentially blackmail the state into paying for upgrades to their nuclear plants, which you would think that since they run them and they're charging for electricity, that would be part of the program. I mean, when you have these things that happen, this is a very long-winded theoretical question. When you have all this stuff that is hitting at the side, we don't want any nuclear plants, we don't care if, or coal plants, we don't care if you put so much money in there that the air coming out of there is fit to breathe right out of the stack. We don't want them in our neighborhood. And all of a sudden you use the term kowtow to that pressure, and you close all three of them without any regard to how you're going to replace them. I mean, the politics is totally at odds with the economics. I mean, I don't want anybody breathing bad air either, but the point is that there's a price at which you can make a coal plant just as nice as a gas plant, right? Now, you may not want to pay it, and you might want to tear the place down, but that's an economic decision. It shouldn't be so much of a political one, I don't think. I mean, so when things mashed together like that, and I think it is Germany that closed their plant, nuclear plants, and all of a sudden here they are 15 years later, you know, up Bleep Creek without an ore in terms of energy. I mean, how do you resolve that, Kevin? Russell, with the, you know, with the politics so intersecting with the the economics, or using your head.
Well, I mean, there's so many moving parts that you know will push against any type of, you know, they're choosing any type of path energy wise. I mean, nuclear scares the crap out of everybody, but it logically it would be the solution to a lot of problems. But once a decade, you have a like what happened in Japan or what happened in Russia. That just the meltdowns just kind of scare the crap out of everybody, and so we automatically shy away from that one. And then coal's just been vilified. I wonder how vilified somebody would be about coal if we can't, if we have to shut down the whole power system for a couple of hours in February.
Yeah.
I think everybody would change their mind very, very quickly. And, they don't have enough. I think it was Lebanon basically went dark this past week because they ran out of fuel for their plant. And we're going to have to basically tap into their neighbor's grids just to turn on the TV and stuff. I'll bet you they'd be thrilled to have a coal-fired plant right now.
Yeah, I don't see how we have the coordination to actually do this on a bigger scale. I mean, I would much rather have solar or wind or tide or whatever it is than an ugly old coal plant sitting there. But it seems, Russell, that there's more to this. I mean, I don't know as much about this stuff than some people come on the show. But if you talk about a coal plant that's sitting in Pilsen, basically, right here, you can see it out my window. You have the wires right there. You've got the transformers right there. You got everything coming to downtown. It is servicing this area. And oh, by the way, it's on the grid. So if you need it to go to the burbs or you need it to go to Indiana, you're inputting the grid from a pretty close in location. So your cost of stuff being denigrating across the wires is relatively cheap. Okay, so now you have some massive wind farm in North Dakota, which obviously, if you've ever been up there, the winds are relentless. We should be making power there right and left, and a lot of people are. But now, how the hell do you get that to Chicago? Well, now, Commonwealth Edison was perfectly capable, in their own way, of having this plant here and distributing the stuff within 20 miles of the plant, right? But now, who owns the grid from North Dakota? Now, Commonwealth Edison might say, okay, well, I don't want to buy your friggin' power from North Dakota when this coal plant is burning right here and the thing's already on. So even though you've got, matter of fact, a closer example is if you drive to Indianapolis, you know that huge wind farm you go through? Well, even on a windy day, you're going to see half of those things essentially silent, right?
Yeah.
The reason why you see them silent is because the grid is already full. And even though a windmill won't, once you have it, for the thing to start turning is essentially free power in terms of incremental cost. The grid can't handle it because the other plants are already on. All right, so Commonwealth Edison is not about to buy that power from Indiana when the Pilsen plant is on, because it's already on. It's full, right? So now all of a sudden, but now the lines coming from Indiana to Commonwealth Edison, are they the new high capability lines or the old ones? Which is a huge difference in how much power you get across and without degrading. Well, Commonwealth Edison says, screw it, I'm not paying for those lines. I mean, I just as soon use my coal plant here or whatever I got here. So now the question becomes, are these interstate lines, now are they going to have to be nationalized where people can pay to use them instead of trying to force people to upgrade them so you're forced to buy other people? This would be a guy as smart as you with 15 guys working for you, a 6-month problem just to bring this before Congress. This is a real this is what I think what's happening. My message here, Russell, is the things we talk about now, like in Twitter and the various functions and community groups and whatever, have no idea how complicated this is. And once you decide now all of a sudden for Commonwealth Edison to buy the stuff from Indiana or North Dakota, and the lines aren't good enough, and the Commonwealth Edison said, I told you I didn't want to use those lines, screw you. I mean, how do people even figure out something is that complex unless somebody, you know, talks to you about it for over a period of years? I mean, there's way more to this than meets the eye. And it seems like, we're governing by, you know, hey, that's a good spaghetti sauce. Give me some. Well, how do you make it? In 30 words or less. Well, I can't do it in 30 words or less, you idiot. That's why it's good, you know. Anyway, you talk for a while.
I mean, it's such a complex problem. You almost feel like, and I know that the whole national grid, I mean, we saw what happened out in Texas a while back when they got just a little bit of snow. You know, they had a huge energy problem. And a lot of it is infrastructure-oriented. Part of me wonders if it's easier just to start from scratch. That just sounds absolutely awful, but a lot of the stuff is so antiquated, it probably is cheaper just to come in and replace everything and replace everything with the cleanest possible thing that you can plug into, you know, the best possible wire. And I think you just start kind of like they did with the nationwide interstate system. You just start and put it on top of things that were already there, but, you know, just kind of trash some of the stuff that ruins the environment, the stuff that's not very cost effective, and try to find a happy balance between the two.
Well, how does Russell Rhodes and his idea, which by the way I might agree with, but I'm not going to take credit for it because I want you to fight this battle by yourself. How do you deliver that message to the Commonwealth Edison boardroom?
If ComEd, you know, you were talking about if you ever accept any government money whatsoever, if you accept money from the bad guys, they got you. All of these entities are very beholden to the government. What happens is the government tells them this is what they're going to do. Now I'm not agreeing with that being the route taken, but government already is telling them. I think our industry, the financial industry, is extremely regulated, especially the consumer facing part of our industry. You can't tell me that the power industry doesn't deal with the exact same thing.
Well, they are. They're probably nipped in the ass just like we are. But on the big things, you can let a Robin Hood exist, right? You can have rate increase after rate increase for 80 years in a Commonwealth Edison to maintain the system, to do this, to do that. You know, this is an older system. We bought this from another firm 100 years ago. And yet, I can walk into one of my local establishments and talk to a couple guys I know work for, you know, power company, the guys that do the high wires and all that stuff. And they say, oh, by the way, that thing you read about 2 years ago, the bill went up because we're going to replace, like, all transformers and all alleys or something or whatever it was. Because I had one down in Englewood last week. The thing, the date on it was, like, 1908. You know, he goes, the idea that they're running around doing this stuff, they're not doing crap. And who's kidding who? I mean, you hear stories like that, and at the same time you see your bill go up and up and up. And, you know, back in the day, I mean, and this was a Milton Friedman thing, you could just as easily, instead of giving Commonwealth Edison or People's Gas, whatever you're talking about, or the phone company, the singular rights to put a gas line or a power line down the middle of the street or in the alley, wherever you put it, and saying this is yours and we'll, quote, regulate you, the city could have put in the gas line. And then auctioned off the rights to access the city's equipment. And if you'd have done it properly, of course, has there ever been a really proper auction in the city of Chicago in our lifetime? I'm saying no. But if you did it properly, you don't have to monopolize the toll road. You can have the toll road, they don't take cash anymore. The place that took cash, you can you could auction that off to 10 companies, and the one who's willing to provide the service, if, as long as the auction is legit, which it probably wouldn't be, you can do it that way. You don't have to give them the right to own it, right? You can. There's many different ways to do this economically. Or there's a few, anyway.
Oh, yeah. And it would be, it's well beyond something I could tackle on my own. But it would definitely, it would involve government dictating what's going to be done. And when you say walk into the boardroom at ComEd, it basically would be walk into the boardroom at ComEd, and it would be, here's what you're going to do.
Yeah, that would be a tough. I mean, you'd be like my buddy Dr. J. One day we were arguing about taxes, and he's talking about how you shouldn't be able. It should be a simpler thing and a simpler system. I said, okay, John. You're an ex football player. You love the game. I said, first thing I want you to do is and your brother owns a restaurant up in Minnesota. The first thing I want you to do is go over to the restaurant show, which happens to be this week, and give a big speech how you're getting rid of the deductibility of entertainment meals. And then if you survive that little visit, then I want you to go over to the NFL and tell them people can't deduct tickets anymore. And if you make it through the week, come back and do the show next week. He's like, what do you mean? I said, well, nobody wants it. Nobody wants to be that person. And these businesses are set up in a way where they're charging enough where they know that if he couldn't deduct it, those people wouldn't be there. It becomes a chicken and the egg, right? I mean, which...
Yeah.
And any kind of change like that, were you... it just so happened when I was in college was the breakup of the... Of both the big... When I say the airlines, they were deregulated and so were trucking companies. That was an incredible... flipping around of wealth and assets for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of hardship there. I mean, the place I worked for, on California Express, they went out of business because of it. And because they had just, the prices had started to drop on paper, and they bought all this Ohio paper for then, a couple of $1 million, a lot of money back then, and sure enough, everything was deregulated a month later, and the paper was worthless. You could have gone to Ohio without it. They were out of business. They couldn't carry it. They couldn't meet the note because they never even started business in Ohio because there were already people ahead of them. So I mean, when you make these monumental changes, it's a big deal. But I'm going to say that Commonwealth Edison's in on a tick on a dog better than they ever have been. Do you think
they're tick on it? I didn't catch the last analogy.
I said they're like a tick on a dog. You can't get rid of them at this point.
No, you can't get rid of them, but you can make them do what. The tick's not a good one for me to work with on this one, but you can make them do what you want them to do. You've got that much control over them.
Well,
public utilities are practically a pseudo governmental thing.
But they've paid off everybody in the had a, how can I say this politically correctly, Matty? They've had a huge lobbying effort over time in the halls of government here in Illinois.
Oh, yeah. No, they do. What it's going to take is people being extremely unhappy.
And organized.
It's that whole crisis thing.
Well, how are we...
It's going to involve, possibly rolling blackouts, the price of energy going up an awful lot. I swear I'm on top of this, but we talked about me being in London a couple of weeks ago, and there's a huge storage of gasoline there, whether it's, and it's part of the supply chain issues. They don't have enough people to drive those round trucks and put gas in the ground at the gas station. And I had a couple of people say the government's not acting as quickly as they would under other circumstances because they just want everybody to buy electric cars.
That's possible.
And it sounds like a conspiracy type thing, but there's probably some logic to it.
Now, I think, though, when the stuff the that you teach, I mean, obviously you know all this stuff, or you wouldn't be all the degrees you're going to get. But have you ever dug into, like, some of the crap that I took, you know, serious price theory, serious labor law, those kinds of things? Did you work your way up the chain taking those god-awful courses like I did, or were you always on, like, in the business side of it, which would be much more fun?
I was always on the business side of it.
I believe it's much more fun dealing with those kinds of things than the stuff I had to deal with. But on an economic basis, if you look at what the price of, if it was true, okay, and I know you're telling me what they're telling you over there, if it was true that there was a shortage of, quote, drivers, that would mean, okay, that there's a refinery someplace, okay,
yeah,
that's busting at the seam with gasoline. There's a at some price they can't wait to get rid of it. All right, and now there's a truck available because, by the way, there's just a shortage of drivers. Nobody said there was a shortage of tankers, right? So there's a truck available, and oh, by the way, there's a gas station that if he manages to get gas, he's gonna be able to charge damn much for it. His eyes are gonna look like dollar signs. You can't tell me that if we're talking about 40,000 gallons of gas, and all it's gonna take is for somebody to put his ass in that truck and get it from the refiner, who's giving it away at a dollar a gallon, and you go to some place that doesn't have it, and he's going to charge $5 a gallon for it. If somebody's going to make, there's $160,000 worth of margin on that truck that you can't find a friggin' guy. I mean, you could be the head of the Bank of England, and you'd take that job, and then you'd be willing to pay somebody that much if that's really what's going on. Or where am I wrong economically?
What they say is that they lost the people due to Brexit because people couldn't come over from, I'm just not picking on the country, but people couldn't come over from Poland and work in the UK and make a lot more money than they could in Poland anymore, because of the Brexit situation. And what they've had to do is they're reversing some of the labor rules to get people over to drive the trucks. Because they don't have the qualified people. It's not like you can just show up and do it tomorrow. You got to go through a little bit of training. Hopefully you go through some training to drive one of those rolling bombs.
Yeah.
So that's what they were doing. They were changing some rules. There were rules that you couldn't get one of those licenses if you had certain felonies and misdemeanors.
Okay.
And they backed up on that as well to try and, get some more qualified people. But there's also an issue over there that we've got over here where you can make money by sitting at home.
Well, I'm saying, is that...
I know our president says that there's nobody out there that would rather, everybody would rather have a job than live on government assistance. I don't totally agree with that.
Well, they're not doing that anymore, though, right? Didn't the government money...
They're not here. Which you would have thought would have lighted itself in the jobs created the monthly number we got last Friday.
Yeah.
There's a big disconnect right there as well.
Well, let's go to break here because we're going to get these CPI numbers here in a second. But I also want to talk to you about what's going on with the VIX, what's going on with the market, and why there's nothing but open... help wanted signs, and yet the amount of 35-year-old people sleeping on the street on down the block here seems to grow by the week. And Manny Weber and I walk by him every morning. There's a disconnect all over the place, Russell. And I'm at a loss to explain it. SP Futures up 12, Nasdaq Futures up 81. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber. Sitting here busily. Russell busily going through the CPI number here. It came in as 0.4%. Ex-food and energy, 0.2%. Just saying. That would be my view of that number. But I'll go through this a little bit. S&P futures up 4.25. NASDAQ futures up 40. Again, we leaked badly into the close the last two nights, and we're coming back a little bit here today. Dow futures up 22. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 122. They were down earlier, I guess, up 0.8%. FTSE up 92 cents, call that flat. CAC round up 27.4%. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 90.3%. Shanghai up 14.4%. Hang Seng unchanged. Way of review on yesterday. Dow was down 117, S&P down 10, NASDAQ down 20, but the futures dropped like 30 points in the last, I'm going to say 20 minutes. They were up and they were flying down. Bonds, unchanged, 1.58. The Bund, minus 0.01 change, so we're at a minus 0.11. Japan still a positive 0.09. Oil, we've got down 49 cents, 80.15. Brent down 60 cents, 82.82. So the big run up that got to 82 something the other day has eased off a little bit. Natural gas down 2 cents, 5.48. RBOB down a penny, 2.36. Maybe Russell will opine how this natural gas shot up over 6. Now it's retreated pretty heavily. Gold up $17 now, $17.76. Silver up 36 cents, $22.88. Copper up 8 cents, $4.40. We've got the crypto. We've got the Bitcoin down 437, 55,166. As Russell's buddy Jamie Dimon said yesterday, it's worthless, but it still isn't going down very much. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Coming up on 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic building steadily on the Edens and Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Earlier crash on the Stevenson is all clear. Southside Expressways, you could say the same. Nice, steady traffic volumes, but no accidents to report. We do have a crash way out west.
in the western suburbs out near Aurora. Looks like I-88, the Reagan, on the eastbound side just before Farnsworth Avenue. There's a crash blocking the left lane, so expect delays if you're coming in from the far western suburbs. Just northeast of there, North Avenue, right at Route 64 there, and Fair Oaks Road, there was an accident. That's in Wheaton. And then northwest of there, looks like Route 25 at Bluff City Boulevard, there's an object on the roadway that's causing a slowdown in the western suburbs out there. But everything else is all quiet. Weather today, a bit warmer than yesterday, and we'll see some more sunshine as well. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 71. Right now it's mostly clear and 61 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 75 today. Right now it's clear and 52. In sports, the White Sox 2021 season came to an end yesterday as they were blown out at home by the Astros 10-1, dropping that best-of-five series 3-1. So the ALCS is now set. Dodgers evened up their series with San Francisco at 2 apiece, beating the Giants 7-2 yesterday. The deciding Game 5 will be tomorrow night, and then the Braves will know their opponent, and we'll be down to 4 teams in the major leagues. Lastly, the NHL season puck drop took place last night with a couple of games. The Blackhawks opened their campaign tonight in Colorado to take on the Avalanche. That's a 9 p.m. Central Time puck drop to get their season started. The Phoenix Coyotes open their season tomorrow. They'll be at Columbus. Chief.
I will go to a Blackhawk game with you if you... I like the ones on Sunday that start at 6 o'clock and I want to be in a skybox first level.
Okay. Yeah, I go when I get free tickets, so that's usually about once a year.
No, but I mean, but, so now, I'll let now, you know. But now you're a big shot. You were Russell. You guys are big shots.
I don't care how big shot of a guy I get. I'm not paying hundreds of dollars for hockey tickets.
No, you gotta,
that ain't gonna happen.
You gotta get, you gotta get like 4 guests thing. You take your whiff, she'll go, and then I'll go, and then, maybe we'll ask Russell.
What part are you missing about buying the tickets?
No, don't buy them. You gotta know guys. You gotta have guys. I'm not expecting
no one gives away free tickets when they cost $300 a ticket.
Well, Skybox are way more than that.
Right. So you don't get free tickets.
All right, so we're not going. What can I tell you? Unless Russell's inviting us, what am I gonna say? Russell, what do you make of this, CPI number? I'll just run through the, year over year. I'll try and do it without comment. Food at home.
Couple of them.
Yeah, well, the all items are, this is year over year, 5.4%. We've got food at home up 4.6%. We've got, where are we here? Now there's a million things in here, of course. We get down to food away from home up 4.7%. And I'm going to say for a guy who eats out a lot, that number basically sucks. Do anybody think that their restaurant bill is only up 4.7% from a year ago?
I think it's higher than that.
Energy, however, up 24.8%. So gas is up from basically what, 290 something to probably 350 or so. But that's probably somewhat accurate, wouldn't you say? I mean, I don't know. Seems like it's not all that far off. Energy'd be up 25%. So all items less food and energy are only up 4%. This is year over year. All right. So when you get, they got appliances and all kinds of crazy stuff in here. Apparel up 3.4%. There's got to be a thing in here for cardigan sweaters, but I won't dig in there. Let's see, new vehicles up 8.7%. Used cars up 24%. I'm going to say new vehicles, the price you have to pay is up way more. I've heard of people paying over the list that actually bought a new car, and if you pay over
We're in that process right now of adding a car to the Rose household. Yes.
I thought you were dumping one. Did you get rid of yours?
I got rid of one, but now I need one again. So there. I was trying to trade them, and when you just told me that used cars were up 24%, I winced a little bit, meaning that I didn't sell the high.
but if you're making the same transaction on the same day, it's kind of hard to catch the high end one and not on the other.
I know. No. I sold the car a couple of months ago. We've been down one for a little while.
Okay.
So.
All right. So
I went to Car Cash for a short period of time. You know what? I'll tell you a place that I've seen it that's just
mind-boggling. sometimes I have to rent a car down here. That's why I'm thinking about buying one. The cheapest car, well, you do this to me all the time. What do you think the cheapest car for me to rent this week? You know, and I'm talking about like a little, you know, I mean, something that I'd be embarrassed to drive around in. The smallest compact possible. What do you think that would have that cost for me to rent this week?
I mean, I know it's today. High because I wanted to get some work done on mine. I was thinking about renting one for a week, and even for a piece of crap was $400 or something. Or I mean, it's a big number, so it's got to be $100 a day at least.
Exactly, you nailed it. The cheapest car to rent was 101, and. When I was renting the car, when I was getting it, they had a Jaguar F-Pace, like, over to the side, you know, saying, hey, would you like to rent me? And that's a car that I'm thinking about buying, but that was going to be, I think it was $340 a day.
God. Well, I mean, if you
that's
were...
insane.
What I assume is, you know, they'll sell some of those cars when there's not a whole lot of demand. What I think has happened is, they don't have enough cars to rent right now, so they can be picky about the prices, and they probably sold a big portion of their fleet when used car prices were up so much.
Probably.
So and now, they're having the same problem we are with replacing them.
So now if
I got some Kia something or other, and it has 38,000 miles on it. That's kind of rare for a car rental for birth.
Yeah, usually they like to get rid of them after a year or two. So... let's say, for instance, now you're not in this need of this, but if you were a real big shot, say a PhD professor, and you wanted and didn't have a family or whatever, and all of a sudden you wanted one of these real high end dating services,
mm-hmm.
and and there's a lady in Indianapolis who they vet for you on the dating service is, you know, whatever you need, three languages and blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
Now it would with all the money you're spending, it would be peanuts. For you to pick up that Jaguar and just put the icing on the cake when you went to pick her up for the date.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, first off, I can tell you that the last thing on God's green earth, even when my wife was finally fed up with me and pushed me out the door, is going on a date.
So you wouldn't be a candidate for the Jaguar.
You'd
be buying a $1,000 bottle of champagne.
The last thing in the world, and maybe it's being around college kids and witnessing a lot of the drama and stuff. I don't know. But, dude, that's the last thing in the world I ever want to do.
God. Anyway, well, okay.
Yeah.
So, I'll get a load of this. Now, if you had your buddy, Maddie, purchase of pets up 4.2% from last year. These guys get down to the nitty-gritty here. Education up 2.6%. Alcoholic beverages up 2.6%. I'm going to say that's much higher than that because you can't get any...
Hand-in-hand.
But here's the one that gets me. Rent of primary residence year over year or in rent of primary residence or lodging away from home, owner's equivalent rent of residence. What would you guess?
I would guess kind of flat. But
well, the housing prices are up 25%, for God's sake. Why would you say flat?
Because the kind of people that are renting.
No. This is the owner's CPI.
I thought you were saying rental.
Well, there's actually two different
lines. I thought you were saying like apartment rents because I know, because I'm still shopping around for an apartment down here. And they're, you know, if I just have a small inquiry to a place, they bug the crap out of me.
Oh, okay, but I'm saying rent of primary residence, it's 2.4%. With housing mm-hmm. prices up 25%, owner's equivalent rent, which is essentially their line for housing, if the housing that you live in, is up 2.9%. So I'm going to say that's a little off, like a lot off. Just saying.
You think it should be much higher?
Yeah, well, if the price of houses are up 25%, how can it be 2.9%?
How do they count? That's a number I don't know how they.
Well, that's the one. They changed it. They changed
how do they calculate that?
They took.
Who was running their household?
Yeah, well, that's the that's the whole point. They took the price of houses out of this thing maybe a decade ago and replaced it with this owner's equivalent rent, which nobody knows how the hell they calculated. But basically, it has understated the price of housing now for 10 years at least, in most people's opinion.
I got to get somebody on how they come up with that number.
Well, here's one. Health insurance.
Logic whatsoever.
Health insurance. First of all, health insurance, what percentage of the basket do you think they have down here? And what do you think they have it year over year, up or down?
I assume it's got to have gone up a little bit. And I know it's a really small part of the basket. It's like 5%.
Try 1.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
1%. And?
No.
Yeah. I agree with you. Plus, they got it down 9.4% year over year. When has anybody's health insurance ever gone down?
It's the biggest deduction on your paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even above taxes now.
Yeah, and even and if you, God help you, if you have to pay for it yourself, it's got to be one of the guys here in the building. He splits it with the place. His wife and his kid. Actually, no. The kid is on Medicaid, believe it or not. So the kid's not included. Him and his wife, it's $1,350 with a $3,000 deductible. $1,350 a month.
So, oh my goodness.
So how is that? I mean, I have no idea what he makes here. I mean, I don't know what you guess, Matty. 40?
You know what? That's in line with what mine is.
Yeah. Well, it's an okay policy. And what I'm saying is that if you're making. If the median person makes $36,000, how does $1,300 a month, if you're paying for it yourself, how does that come up to, well, it's you and your wife, so let's use the $56,000 number, which is the household median income. How does $1,300 a month, 1%, $1,300 times 12
no,
is what?
Not.
It's $16,000. How in God's name is that 1% of 56?
I thought all that was fixed.
What?
Didn't we fix that like 5 years ago?
No, the total medical care services, everything you get, dental, eyeglasses, the whole bit, is considered 7% of the basket.
Okay.
So tell me, any family that if you had dental, eyeglasses, hospital related, inpatient, whatever it is, nursing homes, adult daycare, care of individuals and elderly at home, how that could possibly be 7% of anybody's basket?
There's no way.
Well, this is your government at work. We had Mike Hart on Monday, and he's you and he are Vic's mavens. All right, so I want we got a few minutes left here. He's talking about the Vic's hanging around here at this 20 number, meaning that the market tells you that there's a reasonable chance of having a 20% move in the next year. Correct? Isn't that what that says theoretically? Sort of.
Sort of. Yeah.
And he thinks that the number hanging up there is, you know, without any sort of directional move, that the market is just afraid going out. And without giving it and in the last few days, I've just noticed, Russell, I mean, I know you're teaching all day, whether you had a chance to watch it, the 40, 50, 60, 80-point moves in this, especially in the NASDAQ futures, seemingly on nothing from 12 to 12:15, then back up by 12:30. Is that a VIX related issue? Is it a market fabric related issue? Is it not enough market makers? Is it nobody knows who's doing what? Is it the fact that people like me that are getting more conspiracy by the day, that every single piece of news coming out of Washington is front run? I mean, after the three guys, the vet, you know, admitted it last week when there was a deal on the budget. I mean, I'm not accusing the man personally, but it sure as hell looked like, McConnell, before his speech, went out and bought 30 spoos. I mean, we ran up right before. I mean, it's so obvious if you're watching it that this stuff is being front. Is it just people making the markets are so afraid that if you want to buy a 5 lat, good, you're paying up 80 points. What is going on? I mean, you guys are researching a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, there are liquidity issues. You know, we have a lot fewer market makers than we've had in the past. But also, I think there's this skittishness where if you've gotten run over, you know, I I got hit by a car down here about 3 weeks ago, and I swear this is going somewhere as well.
Were you in a car?
Car pulled out of a blind spot, and I went across the hood of it.
Really?
I'm still jumping a little bit when I'm driving a car and I go by driveways. I've still got this thing in the back of my mind about, you know, somebody's going to pull out in front of me. It just continues to happen. But it's dissipating. And I think that relates to the mentality of the market makers as well. We've had some goofy crap going on in the past couple of years where they've gotten run over, whether it's stupid meme stock stuff or whatever. So I think they're, you know, they and their risk guys are saying, you know, don't get too directional. So not getting too directional involves not being willing to trade enough a certain, you know, enough size to facilitate, you know, regular market volatility right now. And that's why the market's moving around more than you would expect it to on nothing. Specifically with the NASDAQ, you know, there's 10 stocks that control the NASDAQ 100. A lot of them are really high-priced stocks. They have really wide bid-ask spreads.
Yeah.
I think a lot of I think specific to the NASDAQ, it's just the construction of the index makes it jump around a lot more than the other one. I think that there are a lot of market participants that have gotten run over one way or another, so they're afraid when they see what we consider a minor move to possibly be the beginning of something a bit more major and, you know, fade away very quickly.
What if you had to guess? I'm going to get way too technical here, Mandy, so get ready for the tweets. All right, I'm just going to dive into this. If you're trading the futures, your fallback position, if you really get, like you term, run over, in other words, if somebody buys a future from you, I'll use the S&P, up, you know, $6 or something, your fallback position is to turn around and to buy spiders, obviously, to hedge yourself, or you could buy a basket of stock, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say that what you mentioned in the NASDAQ, there's got the FANGs, obviously. The FANGs plus Microsoft really are, what, 48% of the thing, or 50 or some number. Most of those, like you say, are getting a little wider. They're mostly fairly liquid, but there's a bid and ask spread. What would you say that the equivalent spread is on the, on the basket in the NASDAQ? It's got to be pretty friggin' wide.
I'm going to figure it out.
In your head, but I'm saying
I'm going to figure it out, and I will report back to you next week.
It's got
to
be several points.
Since I've got to pull a bunch of NASDAQ 100 portfolio information today when I'm at school, and I'm just gonna freeze the bid ask spread like in the middle of the day.
Okay,
on all
well, you can do that. Cool.
Figure it out.
Just because this is a part that everybody should know. I mean, even a stock that's fairly liquid. I mean, what am I looking at right now? I'm looking at Schlumberger down 30 cents. Now, I mean, say the market's, it just traded 32.58. Okay, so if the market's 32.55 bid at 32.60, if I were to ask a lot of retail people, what's the price? They'll say 32.58 and I'll go,
Nope.
If you want to buy it, it's 32.60. If you want to sell it, it's 32.55. You have a buy price and a sell price. So what Russell and I are talking about is if you sold or had to buy a whole bunch of NASDAQ futures and had your only escape to hedge yourself was to turn around and buy the stocks that, you know, make up a big percentage of the basket, how much higher than what you just sold the future are you going to have to pay to get all those stocks on their offers? Or how much more are you going to have to sell to get them all on the bids? So, if you have a 15 point market in the NASDAQ future, and the price of your underlying hedge, should you have to go there, is 150 points, you got a problem, right?
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what it is.
Yeah,
I've totally figured that one out today.
Well, if you had to make I don't know. Does anybody trade the big spoos anymore, or do they all trade the minis? I think most people.
There are no big spoos anymore. They retired them with September expiration.
Really?
Yeah, they kind of quietly went away. But so the mini, which is the one that we're always quoting now anyway, that is the equivalent, it's not what they call it, but that is the big contract. But it has been the big contract de facto, like you just said. Does anybody trade big spoons anymore? Not really. They didn't. So, just the ease of electronic trading. In fact, internationally, most people weren't even aware that the big spoons existed.
What
they call the E-mint.
All right, so the NASDAQ I'm looking at, is that still quoted in 14,000, though. That must be a big... The big NASDAQ must still trade.
No. The E-mini NASDAQ and a micro NASDAQ, that's what trades.
But it's the same price, it's just a smaller contract.
Right.
It's set up
differently. Smaller dollar multiplier to it.
Yeah, because if this...
The big spoon was 250 times the index. The E-mini, which is now the de facto S&P future, is 50 times the index, and they got a micro that's $5 times the index.
Okay, run that by everybody again. So I've got the S&P futures are $43.39. So that's how much is $50 a contract?
Yeah,
it used to be $250.
So you got $215,000.
Okay,
you're right.
All right, so but it's. It's $50 a point where the old... They started out as 500, remember?
The big ones were 250.
They way back in the day when the...
When
the S&P futures was 400, they were 500, it was $500 a point.
Yeah, and if it were $500 a point right now, that would be $2.1 million for a single contract.
Yeah, because the OEX was $100, and the spread between the OEX and the S&P was known as the 1-5. It was known as the 1-5 because it took 5 OEX contracts to match up with 1 S&P. And then it became 250, which made more sense. And then now it's 50. But the big NASDAQ is still trading 14,670, right? But now how much, that's way less a point, correct?
Right. Not 100% sure what it is.
Yeah, me neither. So what, on the VIX piece, do you think it's just, this is all going to kind of just die down, or are we going to get this move that everybody seems to be talking about?
Eventually it's going to grind its way lower, but I think we got to get through the fourth quarter. I mean, there's just a lot of concerns as to, I know there's a lot of concern just looking at the numbers with respect to the earnings season that we're kicking off right now. And that's one thing I think that's going to keep people a bit on edge. And then just, when is inflation going to go away? Is it going to go away? The derivative markets have now moved the first hike in a long time date from 2023 to September of 2022. So I think that might start to creep its way into the markets as well, but also make VIX stay a little elevated and worried about a potential sell-off. But on the opposite side of that, it's hovering around 20, but some of the, I hate to call them sell-offs, but these sell-offs that we've had recently, you haven't seen much of a VIX reaction at all. It's not reacting in either direction.
Well, 20 is pretty high.
No, where is it right now? It's the last...
It's right about there. I got 19.59, down 26 cents.
We're hovering around that 20 level, but the moves above it aren't as dramatic as we would normally see when people are a bit, when we're getting a headline-grabbing morning.
Well, we get one or two days where we fly one direction, and then we come back the other way. But if we ever got 3 or 4 days down hard, or up hard, I mean, more likely down hard, I mean, that people would be more afraid. We'd see it. Russell, thank you, buddy. When are you inviting Maddie and I down to an Indiana Skybox game?
You want to come down for homecoming and watch Michigan State just beat the living crap out of them this weekend?
No. Although I wouldn't mind. I would love to have dinner with you. That'd be cool.
Okay.
But we'll get together, bud. SP Futures down 1, NASDAQ Futures up 28 after the CPI number. Very quiet. So no big move today. Tomorrow, PPI. I don't know if that'll cause one either. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect.
Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.